Welcome to the Kelly Cardenas Podcast, where attitude is everything. On today's show, I was very excited to have this young man because he was freaked out. He called me last night and he was like, yo, man, I don't know if we should do this. I don't know what I'm going to say. I don't know how to be like talking about hair because, you know, I'm in the hairdressing business, but he thought I was going to bring him on and we were going to be talking about the hair industry. But the reason why I wanted to bring him on is because his exceptional character, his integrity, and two major factors that I've seen in him over the course of our friendship. And this has probably been about 15 years. The innovation that he has and his ability to adapt immediately. This guy is constantly moving on, mastering something and then moving on to the next. But he's not moving on to the next because the one thing didn't work. He's just able to pivot. And especially in these times right now, as we pass 2020 and into 2021, I believe the most important skills that you will have as an entrepreneur, as a person, as a husband, as a father, as anything, is that is to have innovation and the ability to adapt immediately. He told me that he didn't want any titles there, that he's just a guy. His name is Chase Corbin, and he is the owner of BeaconEvo.com, and he's doing some amazing things. So I want to welcome him to the show.
Hey, what's up, Kelly? Thanks for having me, man.
How you doing, buddy?
I'm really happy, although I'm super pissed you mispronounced my last name.
I did?
There's Cobrin.
Cobrin. Oh, my gosh.
Everyone gets the name wrong. And I've actually, you're one of the very few people I correct, right?
I like you correcting me.
You want to be corrected. You want to be corrected, right?
I love that. I love it. Man, for 15 years, I thought the R was first.
The R has never been first.
It's never been first.
Never been first. Not even for a little bit.
Not even for... Good Lord. Well, the first thing that we want to talk about is the fact of your NFL fandom. You have switched up. Now, most people are not allowed to do this. Like, my boy was a Dolphins fan. He was a guy I grew up with. His name is Johnny, so we're going to shout out Johnny. But Johnny, mid-range, in the middle of his life, just said, I'm not a Dolphins fan anymore. I'm a Saints fan. But the Saints happened to be good at that time, and the Miami Dolphins were in the can. So... Sure. As a friend group, we came together and said, we have to get an application from him. And because of COVID, you can't get this application through. So he still, to us, is a Dolphins fan. Tell us about who you're a fan of and how you were able to switch up.
Got you. By the way, hey, Johnny, not a bad time to be a Dolphin fan. I left right at the wrong time, which is what I tend to do on occasion, right? Being a Dolphin fan has been a big part of my identity for a big part of my life. My parents, neither one of them went to college. But they're both very smart people. And the lessons I learned from them were lessons that were relevant in their lives. Sports was a big part of my dad's life. That's what he was able to teach me. He taught me not only to enjoy sports, enjoy watching sports, but enjoy playing them and all the lessons that come along with that. Learning how to lose, learning how to be humiliated, learning how to get up when you get knocked down, all those things. I think you can take lessons from everything, right? So my wife is calling me. So... being a Dolphin fan my entire life was fantastic, but it was a very self-serving journey. I did it because I liked it. I was born and raised in Miami. They didn't give me a whole lot to root for. But that being said, I was always a fan, and I never really saw myself going another way. But then I had children, and then I moved to the West Coast. And I sat down and I said, you know, this is when I'm living in Vegas now. So when they announced that the Vegas Raiders were coming, or the Oakland Raiders were coming, not a big Raider fan, although I like their ethos as a team, the whatever it takes type of mentality, right? That Al Davis ethos. Let's just win. Who cares? We'll get all these gangsters on, you know, these bad guys on bad contracts, but it didn't matter because nobody else wanted them. And I think there was a niche there, and there's a bigger message even there about how you can become successful. He took pieces off the ground and molded them. He didn't take pieces that somebody else had already polished up. And I think Al Davis was special, a special owner for that. So I'm learning to love the Raiders, but I digress. I am now an Oakland Raider fan, and I did it for my family. And I know that doesn't make a lot of sense, but here's where it does make sense.
No one in the history of the world, Chase, has ever said, I'm becoming a Raiders fan for my family, but continue on.
I wasn't a Dolphin fan because there are winners either, right? Let's be fair. So it wasn't about that. I wanted my kids to be able to have a home team. I think it's a big deal. I want them to, my daughter has her first grade picture where she was in my wife's class. My wife's a kindergarten teacher. She's unbelievable, by the way. The only kindergarten teacher you'll ever know with double masters. How about that? So she's fantastic. And she took her picture in a pink Golden Knights jersey. And that's something I'll always remember. That's our home team. When she goes to school, she talks with her friends at home. We watch games together. When the stadiums open back up, we're going to be tailgating together. We're going to be doing those things that were so formative for me growing up, except I'm not going Aqua and Orange anymore. Now I'm going to go giant chains, spikes on the shoulders. I want to build experiences for my family. I think as a parent, that's one of the things that you are tasked with, that nobody tells you what to do. Yeah, I had two little girls, but they're both going to be Raiders fans either way, so it's all good.
So let's. Girl. You got a girl. I got a little girl too, man. I'm trying to mold her into a Tennessee Titans fan. My son is a Titans fan. We were able to grab a hold of your boy Tannehill, and you know, we picked him up off the ground, like you said, Al Davis, and now I mean, one of the best. I argue this all the time. I'm a Titans diehard. And yeah. I'm saying that Tannehill is one of the best in the league right now.
Ooh, I say I wouldn't agree with you, but I'll tell you this, and this is a larger lessons, right? He may not be the best quarterback in the league, but he might be in the most appropriate position in the league. He is a quarterback that thrives off the play action, right? Uh-huh. That's what he does. The wide receiver in college, he can run. There's a skill to that play action. When do you really let go of the football? When do you pull it back in? It's something he's very good at. Now, no team in the NFL has the ability to threaten the run as well as the Tennessee Titans. Derrick Henry's an absolute beast. Ryan Tannehill is in the perfect position for him to succeed. That being said, he's fantastic, and I do miss him, but Derek Carr's pretty good too.
Now he's a diehard. I love that you went in. So, Chase, let's go back, because when you and I met, it was probably, I would say probably 15 years ago, somewhere around there. You had started off in your business. So let's start off on the innovation part, because, I mean, you were doing something that, you know, you were providing a service that a lot of people didn't understand or know about at the particular time. How were you able to make it through that mentally? Because a lot of times when we go into something and, you know, somebody, you know, not everyone knows about it, or it's not the hottest thing. Sure. A lot of times we have the tendency to give up on that. How were you able to work through that?
Sure. So I didn't come from a whole lot financially. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't digging myself out of any holes either. My parents did a fantastic job. I never wanted for anything, but I didn't have a huge head start either. Right. So I was never felt dejected. I never felt like I was going to fail. I always felt like I was at a baseline. And I needed to build something. I build not necessarily, at least in the past, towards my passions, but instead I built towards the opportunities that I saw. And I think that's something that some of us have to do sometimes. We reach a certain level of success, then we can start dialing that back a little bit and go, let's go work more towards our passion. But you have to meet your basic daily needs, right? So my basic daily needs were to find a job that I could excel at, that I could grow and figure it out. And at the time I met you, that was printing out vinyl decals and slapping them onto clothing. That's what I learned how to do. And there was a larger application, and it ended up leading me towards the first huge contract I ever got. And it was with the Ultimate Fighting Championship. I started with those guys. That's where I met your brother. Actually, I met your brother before all of that. He actually is one of the guys that got me into it. By the way, growing up, not just a huge football fan, but a huge MMA fan too. I've watched every UFC. To meet Wanderlei Silva's manager was absolutely out of this world for me. I'm sitting in my tiny little apartment trying to build a craft, right? And I get a call, and I forget how I got the call. As a matter of fact, one of your former guests probably put me in touch with Rob. And I remember he said, hey, I'm coming over. I want to get a few things done. Could I do it? Yes. Had I done it before? No. Was I confident doing it on that scale? Hell no. But that being said, he came over, he met me anyway. I didn't want him to see my apartment, so I met him at a gas station. Embarrassingly enough, when he showed up early, of course, as most successful people do, and he caught me jumping over a wall because I didn't want to walk all the way around my apartment complex. The gas station was direct. We shared a wall with our complex. So he caught me just hopping over a wall, and I jumped over and landed directly in front of his car. And I went, oh, no, this is going to be bad. But Rob was one of those guys that could see through the bullshit. I don't know if this podcast allows cursing. I apologize. If not. And he just wanted the job done right. And it was an important lesson for me there, where I come from a place where I lack a little bit of confidence. I need to make sure that I belong in the room, and I need to prove that to myself. Rob doesn't care about any of that stuff. He said, hey, I need something done. I think you can do it. And that has become a theme through all of my business ventures my entire life. to where I've got to from my very first job with your brother to today.
So let's take us through that first one. I mean, was it shorts that you were printing? Was it a banner that you were printing? What was it that you were doing on that? Because I want the listeners to understand your scale. Because most of the time people, especially in today's society and in our culture right now, people look at a person like you that are doing the things that you're doing and they're like, oh, wow, it's oh easy for him because he's always been doing that. But I want them to understand that ground level. Like when you were printing out of your apartment, jumping walls to a gas station to do meetings, right? What was that first project that you did?
I believe it was for a fight. So every one of these fighters, when they would fight at the time, they had sponsors. And Rob was one of the best in the game at procuring fantastic sponsors and making sure their fighters were paid for. This was, of course, before the Reebok deal, which is a whole other story, where they basically came in and stomped out my business and walked away. But I landed them with a client too. Right. So, like I said, there's always a way. If I can impress anything on anybody, it's something my father used to say is be an octopus. If you ever look at an octopus, they're very smart. Let's be fair. They could do a lot, though. They can get out of anything and nobody really gives them credit for. They can camouflage themselves. They can escape anything. They can pivot. And if you can be an octopus, there's a good chance you're going to survive. Right. Unless you're in Japan, in those waters, you're probably not going to survive. You're probably going to end up on somebody's dish pretty quick. But if you can be an octopus and you can survive, well, that's the goal. And that's kind of something I've been doing this entire time. So that job for Rob, I believe, was a pair of shorts where he was going to go ahead and slap sponsor logos and everything. And then this guy was going to go out and try to fight in my stuff. I had never really known if it was going to hold up. It took a lot of research. The things that I started to do were the first times I was doing them as I was doing them. It was what it was. The very first pair of shorts I ever made was with my old partner, Dean Albrecht. It was for UFC 99. I'll never forget it. I think it was, I'll never forget it, and I forgot the name. It was Marcus Davis, the Irish hand grenade. We made a pair of shorts for him. There is a seam directly on the crotch of MMA shorts where the most valuable position is the logo either on the crotch or on the butt. If you're a wrestler and you're going to spend time on top, the butt's the most valuable position. You're getting your air time. If you're a stand-up fighter and you're doing your thing, that crotch is fantastic. You can generally get the logo in the face in the same shot. Boom, throw in your social. Everybody wins, right? But when you put that logo over the front, there's a little slit area that you have to cut so they can open and close their pants. If that makes sense, so they can get dressed and undressed. I took an X-Acto knife, chopped it straight through, went straight through the shorts, and I was too scared to tell Dean what I had done. So instead of fixing anything, I just sent him out to him and he went and fought. Fortunately/unfortunately, he was knocked out quickly. But for the 2 minutes I was watching that fight, you could see his shorts opening and shutting and opening and shutting and opening and shutting. And it was one of the most terrifying experiences of my life because I tried to not do things the right way and try to sneak it through. But what I didn't have the context of at that point was that was money for his manager. That was money for himself. That was, you know, that was marketing opportunity for the sponsor. And I really sat back and thought about that. And I realized that things are more than just getting through. You've got to get through and you've got to treat people with respect and you got to treat situations right the entire way. And that became a big part of my personality. I know I kind of digress from your question, but it brought something up for me. It was something that I thought I could get away with. And even though I did, I didn't.
Well, I love this. I mean, you didn't digress from the question. You hit it right on. And so, staying on that topic of innovation, it like you built your business, and I watched you grow, right? So, we were talking the other day we were on Clubhouse, and we were talking about, you know, I remember coming over and having, I believe it was a hat done. I had some shorts done and I came over to your apartment and you did the things for me in the apartment. I was watching you. You did them. It was a really cool thing. And then I remember coming to your house, like when you moved into a house and you were doing it in the garage and I remember you were so excited with this huge printer that, you know, and you were so excited about it and moving on. Tell us about as you grew your business, and you just hit on it a second ago where Reebok came in. Now, Reebok's not the bad guy. It was just a progression of business. But as opposed to you looking and just getting mad and being like, oh man, Reebok stole my business, you actually got Reebok as a client when you were competing against them. That's innovation. How were you able to manage that, and where was that mindset come from?
I'm an octopus, right? You gotta figure it out. when they were coming in, I knew they were entering a business they weren't super familiar with. I was super familiar with their business. I believe the UFC put us in touch, and all I really need is a conversation. If I've got something I want, if I've got some information I want to get across, they gave me the conversation. And from there, I was able to prove what I could bring to the table. It wasn't something they were asking for. It wasn't something they were looking for. It was something that made sense. One of the things I feel like I can do is put myself in situations where I can thrive. And meeting those guys and taking a situation that was essentially a death knell for my company at that point, which was absolutely killing it. We were doing well. They came in, they banned the individual sale of sponsorships for individual athletes and managers, and it became a uniform. How do you keep making money if you are adding sponsor logos to clothing if there is now a uniform with no sponsor logos? Well, I ended up working with Reebok. They worked with us developing the actual uniforms, which is really cool, creating some of those early prototypes. I still have them, which are super cool. Pieces of history. I've done a lot of really cool stuff. It's actually an interesting thought I had last night. You sent me to your podcast. You said, hey, give it a listen. You'll feel more comfortable. Some of me did. The rest of me went through David Meltzer and Chanel and all of these people. And I said, oh my gosh, Kelly, why'd you tell me to go to your podcast, right? But I watched it and I just kind of understood why you were bringing me on. It wasn't about the amount of money I had or the things that I could show you, but I've done some cool shit and I've enjoyed my life because of it. And I've enjoyed my career because of it. I've got a long list of stuff I could just say, have I been made rich yet? No, I'm at the point of my life right now where I'm starting to understand the financial ramifications of things. I'm 36 years old. I've got two little kids. I think money has become more important to me at this exact moment. I've got a plan for that too. But to my life to this point has been a lot of exploration, a lot of adventure, a lot of great stories, and a lot of really cool boxes that I've checked.
So for all our MMA fans out there, there's a guy named Eric Fortman. I want you to give him a shout out. Eric Fortman, if you could say his name, Chase.
Eric, what's up, dude?
Yeah. So Eric's an MMA fighter. He trains. He's a teacher. The guy is an absolute phenomenal guy. And I was talking with Rob Rivetta the other day, and I had him give him a shout out. And, you know, he's Dustin Poirier's manager, which is amazing. But it's cool for us because it's Rob. It's Rob Rivetta. It's not Dustin Poirier's manager. To me, you're Chase. To the world that you're in, I mean, you're an iconic guy that is constantly around people, that you're constantly in pinch me moments. Tell us about the first pinch me moment. You talked a little bit about it with Vanderlei, but when you started to roll, when things started to move with your company before Reebok came in, tell us about some of those places where you looked around and you were like, I can't believe I'm sitting right here.
All right. This is an easy one. So my very first pinch me moment was, when I moved to Vegas. I'd throw my name out there in a lot of circles. Hey, I'm willing to do whatever it takes. And that's still something that I do today. I really am willing to do whatever it takes. I forget who I was speaking to, but I ended up getting a call, from Tap Out. I mean, to me, like I said, I was a fan of the sport the entire time. To be able to meet these guys, to be able to even be in the same conversation was such a cool thing for me. They said, hey, Chase, you've done some film stuff in the past, right? Sure. Yeah, I have. I've done that. In high school, my friends, this is actually true. We created a movie and we ended up selling it to a company called Grindstone, which is a purchasing agent for Lionsgate Films. And they actually purchased two of our movies. I die in both of them, which is awesome. And me and my high school friends sold some movies and made some money, which was totally cool. So those were stories that I kind of just circulated, and someone thought I might know photography because of that. And they asked me if I'd go out and shoot some production stills for a commercial, like a nationwide commercial Tap Out was shooting. Sure, I can do that. I know I can do that. So I went to Best Buy. I bought myself a camera. I promptly returned that camera after the shoot. These are things you have to do sometimes, right? I went out there, I bought a camera, I read the manual, I figured out what an aperture was, I figured out how to use the ISO, I figured these things out, I taught myself how, and I relied on my instincts, which is something that I generally do. And I went there, I understood the mentality of a fighter. It was Donald Cowboy Cerrone, Pat Barry, Ray Safo, and Stephen Bonner. Those were the four athletes that were there. And I was able to interview those guys, get to know them. I was able to take some one-on-one shots. They didn't ask me to do any of this. I took each guy outside and just kind of tried to get some real cool stuff and just train. I wanted to use them as opportunities. And then I called up a friend of mine afterwards and said, man, I bombed it. Because I'd talked to a photographer friend of mine, and he was giving me some tips. I said, I bombed it. He goes, how do you know you bombed it? I go, I took probably 500 pictures, and I can probably use 11. He goes, that's a good ratio. That's pretty fantastic. And I never really thought about it that way, because I'm always taking, you know, information from my limited view, and I'm saying, well, that's a failure. But when I spoke to somebody who's done it, you got 11 shots that you think you can use? That's fantastic. I was more focusing on the ratio of 500 to 11. It's a lot of failing, right? And I'm not used to doing that. The things I really, really try to do, I rarely fail at. My biggest issue is I don't really try to do a whole lot. I just try to figure out where I'm best served. And in that moment, I figured it out, got it done. But to be able to have those conversations and be able to sit in a room with a bunch of people I felt I didn't belong with, and to be able to actually leave that experience with a job well done. They paid me, they used it. It was fantastic. What a cool moment that was for me.
So I think one of the resonating factors with you, Chase, is whenever I'm speaking with you, is your humble state. You're always talking about, you know, that maybe you don't belong in the room, or that, you know, and it's not a false humility, because there are people that do that where they'll just say things so they could draw out compliments, but you are constantly putting yourself in a place, in a learning position. This is probably one of the greatest strengths that I've ever seen. And when you see that in people, I want to make sure that people understand how important this is. Where did it come from? Was that just born in? Is that just a Chase trait, or was that something taught to you as a kid?
It might be a Chase trait, but that did also come from sports. I realized I sort of work from the bottom up mentally in almost everything that I do. I was a hell of an athlete in my prime. I know it's hard to see, but I was a hell of an athlete. I played rugby at a high level. I played football for a while. And there, if you ask anybody that ever played with me, there was very rarely anybody more intense on the field. But there was also never anybody as scared as I was, like, ever. So my motivation came from a fear of failure. And if I had friends and family there watching, it pushed me even farther. I, by nature, I think I'm a pleaser. I think that's what I do. I do well as a mentee. And because of that, I put myself in positions where I am surrounded by people that have something I need, that have something that I'm lacking. And I've had 4 or 5 really amazing mentors throughout my life. If I can express this to anybody out there looking to try to really improve their life or move forward and progress, be a good mentee. People reach a certain level at some point where they've accomplished things they want to accomplish. They have the money in the bank that they need. And now they want to pass on that message. And some people get to get that out of their system through being a parent. That's something that I love to do. And some people aren't blessed in that way, and they have to figure it out, and they just love to teach, right? So I've surrounded myself with highly, highly successful people, and I've taken little nuggets from each and every one of them. But I have put myself in a position where they want to teach me, and I am open to learning, and I don't argue too much. But I think that really does come from part nurture, but a lot of it was nature of how I was. I think it's just part of who I am. I always wanted to please my teachers. I always wanted to please my coaches. I always wanted to please my mentors. I do my best work as the number two.
How are you able to navigate? Because a lot of times, I mean, when I think a lot of people's biggest challenge is a lot of people's biggest strength on the other side, right? So you take one person, you take the exact same trait, and it could be a person's kryptonite, and the other side, it could be their superpower. Fear is that, right? So with you, when you're talking about fear drives you to accomplish what it is that you want to do. Talk to some of those listeners out there that fear is paralyzing them right now.
Well, you can't let it win, right? Like, if the fear wins, you don't move. And that's the worst thing I think you can do in both your personal life and your professional life. If you allow fear to paralyze you, you can accomplish nothing. As a matter of fact, you can't even fail, and you learn more from failure than anything. So I think it's more important than worrying about winning or losing the game that you do commit to playing the game. And from that, you'll learn all the things you need to learn and lessons you weren't even set out with the intention to learn. And that's been something that's been a theme in my life as well.
So where have you got the confidence? Where does this come from to be okay to fail? Because you talk about the fact that, you know, you told me last night we're talking and you're like, I'm a little bit scared or whatever it was.
A lot of it.
You know, you were
freaking out.
Well, you were a little bit, but that's what I'm saying. For all of our listeners out there, that's what they want to hear. They want to hear a person that's as successful as what you are, not only in your marriage, with your kids, in your business, and to be able to hear a person from a humble state saying, you know, you gotta try, you gotta jump out there and go at it. But it takes a lot of confidence to say, I'm gonna try this thing, and if it doesn't work, like my mom would say, shit, like, you know, I'll try it again. So where, like, talk to us about that confidence, because you really have to, number one, it has to be there, but there's building blocks for it. What would you say would be the building blocks for that confidence to just jump out there and try something?
I'm surrounded by successful people. I've surrounded myself with successful people, not just financially successful people. I've surrounded myself with people that set out to achieve goals and achieved them. One of my absolute best friends, his name is Brian. He started as a busser in Nobu in South Beach at the Delano. Actually, he was at the Delano first and he went to Nobu in South Beach. He worked his way up from a busser to a server. He worked his way up to a manager. And now he's the number three guy in the entire Nobu operation. He's unbelievable. I'm surrounded by people, some of the best graphic designers I've ever seen in my entire life. And I've been able to keep them on my team for 10 plus years. I'm surrounded by people that have opened nightclubs and have made a major influence in the Vegas nightlife scene. I grow my confidence by the fact that even if I don't think I belong in the room, they do. And they haven't kicked me out. So I take a lot of my confidence through my environment, the things people say, the things people don't say, and the opportunities that I'm offered.
So I was just talking with my buddy David Hamilton. It's a big shout out to him. This guy is he's a silent killer. I mean, he's one of the most successful guys that I've ever seen in my life in all aspects of life, with his family, with business, with all these things. But he walks into the room, you would never know. You're going to connect with him. He's going to serve you. He's always going to be in this spot. What he was talking about the other day is there's almost a port of entry into those types of circles, right? Because people that are maybe successful in what it is that they want to do, they start to diffuse when they're okay with you being okay with yourself. Does that make sense? Like when you have a person who's kind of almost shifty and trying to get something come into that circle, you notice those same people who are giving to you almost shut down. Do you see this happen? Right?
100%.
So
I think it comes down to authenticity, by the way. Keep going.
Well, that's a huge thing. And so that's what I want to touch on. How, like, what was the barrier or the port of entry for you into these circles? Because a lot of people that are listening are saying, yeah, I mean, Chase, this is great. You're, you know, hanging out with people who own, you know, are third in Nobu and, you know, open clubs in Vegas. Like, you know, Rudy that I'm hanging out with, he's a bonehead. How do I get away from that? What is the beginning? What's the steps to help somebody to be able to start to get into those circles?
Okay. That's an interesting question. And I think that answer is going to be different for every single person that hears that in every single circle. For me, I think it was, I wasn't trying to challenge anyone's ego in any way, shape, or form. I identified what I can take from a situation and I identified what I can put into a situation. And if those two things aligned, I played those two cards nonstop. That was it. I went in with my head down, being open, humble, and willing to hear the message. And then when my message was needed, I was the very first person to scream it from the mountaintops. But I never forced anything on anybody. So for me, I have to feel comfortable with the group that they do want me there and I can provide value. For me, I like to know that I can provide value and I like to learn that I can take it as well.
I think you're the impersonation of something that my pop had always said. He always said, you never know where someone's been. You never know where you're going to, where they're going. You never know where you're going to meet up with them again. So make friends out of everybody. And I've noticed this with you, yeah, Chase, over the years. And talk to us about the importance of, you know, you made friends with people that weren't doing something at that particular time. And it wasn't for an advantage, like, you know, but talk to us about those kind of relationships, because you even look at, say, you know, a Rob, you know, my brother, who's one of the top personal injury attorneys there in Las Vegas. And I mean, he's a monster. You guys yes. met at a time when he was just growing. I got a chance to meet you in an apartment. Now you're a monster in what it is that you do. You trust me now because you know that I'm not trying to get something. Talk to us about the importance of making those friends, you know, no matter what the person is doing at the particular time.
Kelly, I had nothing to offer you when we met, and I had nothing to offer your brother. I mean, there's a million printers out there, right? I think we hit it off both on a personal level, but I think even before people do anything with their lives, you know who's going to do something with their life. You can tell, even when they're kids, you can look at them, the kids that are moving, the kids that are creating, the kids that are fighting. Those are the kids that are going to be moving, creating, and fighting as adults. You can always tell, right? When I met you, Kelly, you didn't have stores in San Diego and Chicago and multiple in Vegas. Your brother was working for a different law firm where his name wasn't on there, and it should have been, right? So like, as much growing as I've done, I've surrounded myself with people that did the exact same thing. And I knew it. I when I met you guys, I said this to you last night, you guys felt like adults to me. And I don't necessarily put myself in that situation, right? I can still eat chicken fingers with the best of them. But I met with you guys and you guys had it together. You guys felt like adults. I didn't know how much money you guys had. I didn't even know what industry you guys were in. But I knew I could take something from you. And I was hoping you guys could take something from me too. And to be honest with you, having watched your personal growth and being on this podcast, because you got a logo in the corner and you got a matching shirt. How about that? That's unbelievable. You don't have to do that. You do. That didn't exist. You got two books up in the corner that you wrote that weren't written when I met you either. So you were moving. You were doing the damn thing. I need to be around that. Also, you extended an olive branch to me and my family, which you've always taken care of us. And it's something that absolutely isn't necessary, but is appreciated every single day. And I want you to know that personally.
Well, I appreciate it, man. I think that one of the big things with you is that I've noticed too is you have ideas, which we were talking about innovation, right? And so you have ideas, you're able to think through things, which I think is amazing. We talked a lot about mindset. You said that it's part nurture, part nature. I mean, you got a killer instinct in you, you know, be an octopus. But I think that this next place that I want to go and what I would like to talk about is the fact that you have the ability to adapt immediately. Like, that is something that a lot of people lack, right? So they have all these ideas. They have this way of like, oh, wow, if this happens, then this is going to go. But then they take so long to adapt it to their life because they have so much fear of starting. And you have taken innovation, and then you literally adapt it immediately. Let's talk about let's go back to the Reebok time. How long did it take you from your business? Now, you don't have to give us exact numbers, but I mean, let's talk about how large the business had grown, and then it got chopped off. And did it get chopped off? Did they call you and say, in 2 years, Chase, we're going to be switching, or did it just happen kabam?
It just stopped. And this has happened to me twice, by the way. So I don't think it'll ever stop happening to you, because the universe has a really unique way of challenging you every single day. And I'll jump to that second situation. Reebok specifically came in and they had to keep that on the hush. I know the UFC wanted to get on TV. They wanted to get on ESPN. In order to do that, they needed to have a really clean corporate partner that everyone understood and recognized. And that's why they did that. So this wasn't a personal thing. I never took it personally. I think the very first thing a lot of people do, the very first mistake they take is by taking something personally when something goes wrong. That is not going to help you. That being said, I'm an emotional person. I generally start there too. But I've learned to separate the thinking of my heart and the thinking of my head. And that's one of the things that I've been able to grow into as I've gotten a little bit older. I think when we're young, everything goes to emotion, 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 emotion. Eventually, maybe we'll get to logic. Or maybe some of us made so many big mistakes during that emotional phase, we never got to the solution, right? So for me, I think the very first thing you do is don't get emotional about it. It's not personal. Yes, these people you've been working with, they are your friends. Some of them may have gone to your house. All of those things are cool. When it comes down to it, everyone's survival is a self-sufficient survival. And when you get stuck in survival, you do what you need to survive. So the UFC needed to grow their business. They made a deal. That deal cut me in half. I couldn't figure it out. But I also had no expectations as to what was going to happen either. I didn't wake up and say, oh, my business is done. I think I probably woke up and said, well, my business has changed. I don't exactly know how yet. Right. So through at that point, it becomes perspiration. You figure it out. You talk, you lean on some of those relationships that you've been working on and working with and working on curating, and you figure out the next best steps. I think the other issue a lot of people have when they find themselves in these situations are they try to choose the next steps, when in reality, you really discover what the next steps are. Because if you're looking for a brick road, let's say, there's probably not a brick road, but there's this sheet of ice that you could slide across. Maybe that'll get you to the same place. Don't look for what you're looking for. Look for the answer. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Another thing my parents would say is if, you know, every one of us has found money on the ground. Cal, you ever found money on the ground?
Yes, sir.
Okay. If I were to tell you, go find a dollar on the ground, how long would it take you?
Forever, man.
You wouldn't. But when things happen, being able to recognize and jump on opportunity is more important than being able to prospect it, in my opinion.
Wow. So that ability to adapt, I mean, obviously, in these last times has been very, very prominent for everyone, right? You know, when March hit last year, I said the famous last words. I recorded a meeting with my crew. It was my leadership. And I said, hey, guys, everything's fine. It's not that big of a deal. We're going to be back to usual in a couple of days. I've been through 9/11. I've been through 2008 crash. I saw the H1N1. Everything's cool, guys. And I recorded it. And then bang. So, and we had to adapt. Like, we had to adapt immediately. Talk to us again. You said that it's happened to you a couple of times. Let's talk about that ability to adapt and how we can get ourselves prepared. Because it seems like, you know, for you the saying that you don't have to get ready. You don't have to get ready if you stay there, right? And if you stay ready, you don't ever have to get ready. And you embody that. How do you do that? Because it's not like you could foresee any of these things coming.
I'm just willing to accept whatever's opportunity is given to me or whatever opportunity presents itself. In March, same thing happened to me. As a matter of fact, in February, right before that, I signed the contract of my life. I finally got to the point where I'm like, okay, I've done a lot of cool stuff. I've got great stories to tell. This one's going to make me rich. And I was ready for it. Brought in investment. We were ready to go. It was for an events company, an outdoor events company, that would bring 10 to 20,000 people out. And we were going to handle the entire festival element of that fun run, that race, right? So everyone's done the mud run stuff, fun stuff like that. So we were going to take on 280 events a year, 44 different states, 2.8 million people. We had taken on a couple of them already. We had proven our concept. We were good to go. We got investment. We were scaling up. We started in February and March, everything shut down. That company's no longer running races anymore. That life-changing contract, once again, cut in half. But here's where we needed to work on. Now I had a different opportunity and a different challenge. I had an investment for something very specific with a really lucrative return. How do I not give this money back? How do I make it valuable enough to him where he still believes in enough of what we're doing that he will continue moving forward? Because I didn't want to stop. So I sat back and I decided I wanted to become an app developer. We're in the middle of at the ends of developing an app called Tussle. I've sold it around. Everyone loves it. TJ Lavin is now my business partner on that. He's going to host Tussle. He's an absolute legend. I've learned a ton from him. And we've got something really, really cool. The idea was good enough where he believed enough. And I'm not still certain it was him believing enough in the idea or him just believing in us, in our group. But either way, I don't really care. The opportunity is still here and I'm going to crush it. So yeah, you guys will see us dropping an app pretty soon. It's called Tussle. It'll launch in 2021. But once again, I never sought that out. I just kind of looked at the social media world. I looked at the landscape. I looked at people having probably being stuck inside. What are we going to do? What can we offer? And I thought that this idea made a lot of sense. He agreed. Life goes on. Business goes on.
when we talk about the ability to adapt immediately, right, and we're talking about that, it's a lot of times people get so wrapped up. They get so wrapped up emotionally in a decision that they have the tendency not to be able to move on to the next thing. And what I've loved about you, Chase, and being able to watch you and even hear you, not only today, but just hear you in conversations that we've had in the very recent past, is you being able to be in it, but not of it. Even when before we started the podcast today, we hopped on and I said, hey, you know, tell me a social handle. And you were like, ha ha, I grow other people's, but I could tell you the truth. I'm not really that guy. So how have you been able to be in it, but not of it? Because that's so important in Vegas, right? Especially in that city, it is so, and I was there for 14 years. If you are in it, but not of it, or if you're in it, but not of it, you can navigate so many different places. There's so many more doors. But if you get wrapped up in it, a lot of times you get smashed. Can you talk to that point?
Yeah, you never want to get stuck in it, right? I'm definitely more of the mindset, and I believe in paralysis by analysis, which is kind of what you were talking about. I think a lot of people get stuck thinking so much, and then by the time they're ready to move, the opportunities pass them by. So I do take a different approach. I'd rather jump and then figure it out from there. Because we've talked about this, you have to keep moving. If you don't, you die. And even the most deadly predator in the ocean, it's the same thing. If sharks stop, sharks die. When they're moving, there's no telling what they're going to do. I wouldn't consider myself a shark. However, I would consider myself, you do.
No, I do. I consider yourself a shark. I mean, you're an apex predator, man. I mean, you look at the things that you're doing, but you don't look back. That's the cool thing about a great white shark. And this is where leaders get off and they have challenges, is a leader is a great white shark. And there's all type of fish that, you know, whether it be parasite fish or whatever it is. And anytime you see a great white shark, there's always fish next to it and they're going and everybody's cool. If that shark was ever to turn around and try and have a conversation with those fish who are swimming by them, they would all scatter. And that's what leaders do. I find them doing it because they turn around and they're like, hey guys, this is how I did it. But they don't realize that they're a shark with, you know, 4 or 6 rows of teeth and they look as if they're about to devour somebody. I want you to realize that we're so inspired by you, Chase, and even the fact that I mispronounced your name for 15 years. You know, I've been inspired by you because you're simply going after what it is that your purpose to do, and not in a nasty way, but that's what inspires everyone. And I just want you to know, I mean, I don't think of you as a shark in a derogatory way or in a bad way, or like a shark in a used car salesman, but more in a way of a true, true leader in what it is that you do.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. To go back to your original question, about being defined by something and then just getting caught in the weeds, right? I don't know if I'm defined by anything. I actually think being defined by something is a dangerous proposition. I think once you've defined yourself, you limit your options, you limit your mobility, and you're now stuck being something that people are expecting you to be. It changes your narrative. I think I'm much more nimble and I'm able to pivot and I'm able to change because I'm defined by nothing. Very little of my work is in MMA today, but everything I worked in MMA, I'm doing for other industries. So I didn't need to be defined by it. The fact is that I joined MMA because I loved MMA and I didn't know what I was going to do in MMA, but I did something, right? And then I taken those lessons and I moved them on. Now I own a small creative boutique agency. We've got tools that I'm still learning to play with, but we're having an absolute blast with it. And we're absolutely crushing it on this side. So I'm having the best time of my life right now. Got 2 girls at home. And by the way, I don't know if anyone's pregnant or is about to have kids or thinking about it. There's no manual for that either. There are books you can buy, but you are going to get a unique situation that you better learn how to adapt and figure it out, or else you're going to sink, man. That's the hardest job I've ever had in my entire life.
So let's.
My wife's much
better. your wife is amazing, man. Shout out to her. I love her. Getting to spend time with her, you know, over the years has been amazing. I actually haven't got a chance to be able to meet your children, but I think it throws this different dynamic, right? So let's just talk quickly on how being a parent, being a husband, and then being a parent, you have to innovate and adapt immediately. Like, it's like this. Am I correct? Like, yep. And 100%. How awesome is it when people give you advice? They're like, oh no, this is what you're going to do. And you think, yeah, right. Whatever. Right. So talk to us about how that innovation and the ability to adapt immediately goes into a marriage and goes into, into a parent realm.
Okay. I lied earlier. I am defined by being a good parent and being a good husband. Okay. I have to be.
There we
go. Those are the things I've committed to. And those are the things that if nobody else knows anything about me and they know that, I'm good enough with that. That's fine. Kids are all different. And I think if you can be a good parent, you'll be a good entrepreneur too, because you do never know what they're going to throw at you. They could literally be throwing poop at you, right? They could literally be throwing a different problem at you. You never have an idea what's going on. You also have to be okay with all of it. There's no timeout button. There's no stepping aside and saying, I'll come back to this. These are real life problems you have to deal with in the moment. And there's nobody holding you accountable either. I mean, hopefully as parents, the mom's holding the dad accountable or the mom's holding the mom, whatever we decide to do, totally cool. But as a parent, you really have to you have to hold yourself accountable, because whatever you're creating now, you're going to have to deal with a much larger version of later. And so are they. Set them up for success. A lot of that, I'd say most of that, is through them watching you and just embodying all of the messages you pass along. But also, kids are totally different and parents are totally different. Amber and I, we talk to our children no differently than I'm talking to you, Kelly. And I'm talking, you know, some people talk to their dogs that way too, right? And I'm kind of one of those as well. But to our kids, we've taken a different approach. Instead of teaching them bad words, we teach them bad timing. And that's kind of the way we've approached our parenting as a whole. And our kids are probably unique because of it.
So why is it so important? I mean, you went back and, you know, you said you didn't want to be defined by anything, but the one thing that you want to be defined by is by being a good father and being a good husband. Why is that so important?
For a couple of reasons. I'm stuck doing it. I can't quit. It is what it is. Right? Because, I mean, look, options make cowards of people, right? You're in a job, you're in a situation, you want to get out, it gets too hot, you can leave. I don't view parenting that way. And I don't view the bond my wife and I have. I don't view marriage that way either. I'm not a religious person. This is all just coming from the way I feel. My parents were divorced, or actually my parents are separated, but remain divorced. My parents were separated and never got divorced. We still did family things together. We still had family dinners and all of that, but they lived two completely separate lives. Right. I think I have no option. This is who I'm with. This is what I'm doing. I put a lot of effort into these decisions. And B, there's such huge ramifications on every single thing that you do and every single thing that you teach. And I don't take that lightly. So I can be bad. I can be a bad graphic designer. I can be a bad creative director. I don't want to be a bad dad, and I won't allow it to happen.
Wow. So I started the podcast because of two major reasons. One, McKenna, and two, Maddox. The reason why is because I wanted to take iconic people like yourself and I wanted to humanize you. I wanted my kids to be able to hear Chase Cobrin. I wanted them to hear him and hear his story and then realize that Chase was a human being that has a great attitude and has phenomenal work ethic. And that's it. And so what advice would you give to Maddox and McKenna based off of your life experience? And can you give them, or can you say both of their names, Maddox and McKenna, before we start?
Maddox, McKenna, what's up? I had the funniest, and we can't say it on here. I still remember the very first time I met McKenna at your house. We were watching a football game. I don't know if you remember, and she did something so funny. We all had a big laugh. Now having kids, I even laugh more about that situation. But Maddox and McKenna,
what did she do? What did father. She? No, you can't. No, you got you.
We can't. We can't. We absolutely can't. Honestly, unless you. You don't remember this at all?
No, tell me.
I can't do it. Well, you're gonna edit this out, right? This part.
I can.
Or is this happening right now?
It's happening right now, man. We do it. Let's do it.
I can't. I'm gonna pass on that one. We can go back to it, right? I don't know. I don't want to do this. I'm afraid. I'm living in fear.
Guys. Okay.
I'm
all
living
right.
in fear.
There we go. You guys there we like go.
The story, but I'm in fear. I'm just going to go with it.
Okay.
Maddox and McKenna, watch your father, watch your uncle, watch your mom. You've been gifted with unbelievable people to learn from, and be discerning about the messages that you want to take and make your own. You don't have to be just like them. You don't have to do the same things that they do, but you should operate the way that they operate because they're doing it right. That's what I would say.
Well, I want to thank you, man. You told me, and this was the thing for all you listeners out there, is your story is the most important. And I want you to realize that a lot of times we think that maybe we don't have something to bring to the table because we don't have steps or patterns or things like that. But when I had the conversation with you last night, Chase, and you had told me, you said, I don't know about the podcast. And you said to me, this was your words. I'm paraphrasing here, but you said, if it sucks, you don't have to release it. Now, I can say emphatically, every single person out there listening, you understand why I had Chase on the podcast. This guy is absolutely full of wisdom, and he's full of wisdom, and he's full of knowledge. He's full of so many nuggets and so much fire, but today he was simply telling his story, and his story is so important, and I want every one of you out there to realize that your story is unique. Your story is that, and please take from Chase. Like, what I've taken is that not to be defined by anything. Not to be defined by anything that doesn't matter, right? And to be able to take and go after what it is that happens, as opposed to thinking that, you know, you're looking for that particular thing and allowing it to come into your life. And I tell you, you have been fire today, man. I mean, you've been dropping bombs all day. And I thank you, man, for being on the podcast, for taking your time and being here with me.
Kelly, I'm covered in sweat. I appreciate you. I'm terrified. I was terrified coming on, but that makes me feel good. Release it. If people got that message, if people got one of those messages and it can make things better, success. I love it.
Well, you're officially off the hot seat, man. I thank you so much for being on the podcast. For every single one of you out there, make sure that you patronize our sponsors, click the links, do all the things that you know that you need to do. And we absolutely love you. And thank you for listening to the Kelly Cardenas podcast.
Good.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. I hope you're enjoying it. Now's the time to do some shameless promotion. This episode is brought to you by Squeeze Dried, a delicious, no-hassle way to get superfoods, vitamins, and nutrition. SqueezeDried.com. It's also brought to you by Cardenas Law Group, a high-level boutique law firm for all your personal injury needs. That's CardenasLawGroup.com. Thank you so much again for listening. Hopefully you're continuing to enjoy the episode. Another pause for station identification and shameless promotion. This episode is also brought to you by Finley Cars of Las Vegas. I tell you, next level in the car buying experience. And not only that, but the life of your car, the service that you're going to experience is incredible. It's Finley Volvo Cars, LV.com. And also brought to you by Bling Shine Serum, the only product on the market that will add weightless moisture, strength, and shine, and the only product that has the endorsement of my mama. When I showed her all the features and benefits, she smelled it and she said, "This is the greatest product that you've ever done." And I thought, "Mom, do you not look at the features and benefits?" She said, "No, if it smells like that, it must work." And I tell you, every single woman needs a little bit of bling in their life, and this can be purchased at KellyCardenasSalon.com. Here we go again with the shameless promotion. This episode is also brought to you by Piper Diamonds for all your jewelry needs. My necklace that I get complimented all over the country and all over the world, my pendant was made by Piper Diamonds Company. This place is absolutely phenomenal. When you're looking for that special something for that special someone, Piper Diamonds is the only answer. It's PiperDiamonds.co. And it's also brought to you by Kelly Cardenas Salon in Las Vegas and in Chicago. This is top level service, guys, without the ego, and hands down the greatest shampoo experience that you will ever have in your life. This will create an evangelistic type experience. You will be talking about this for years and years to come. The wash house, completely separate area, different sound system, soundproofed head, neck, and shoulder massage. You will be over the moon with your experience, and you can schedule your appointment at KellyCardenasSalon.com. Enjoy the rest of the episode.